Tip.
Good afternoon. It is May 13th, 2024. You're listening to A Little of Column A, Little of Column B, hosted by Will Limonos and co-hosted by Zach Bishop. How are you doing today, buddy?
What is going on, Will? I have a story for you. It is where old meets new. The Mr. Softy, the ice cream truck. You know the sound. It drives around the neighborhood. If you live in the suburbs and people like it, you run out, get some ice cream, kind of a sign that summer has started. They have integrated with an app. So now you are able to not, you don't have to just go and open your window and listen and find out if the ice cream truck is coming. You can open the app and find out exactly where the ice cream truck is and then plan your day around it. And knowing, okay, ice cream truck is three roads over. It'll be over my way in 20 minutes and then you can be ready. Do you think that we needed a Mr. Softy app, or do you think that we're going too far here?
We do have there's two things to all this. I think you can get just about anything you want delivered. And I'm not even a fan of the service. I don't even support it. And they're not even making money. So that's the other silly part about all of those. But I think you have a lot of options of ways to get this. What's a little strange is that you're traveling to a traveling thing. That's like, I feel like you're already on the move. What's the difference between getting on the move and going near where this might be or the nearest convenience store where you could also get ice cream? Is it that brand loyal? Like, you really think that stuff in the truck is that much better than what you're going to get in any other freezer section? Like, I think this is more of like a neighborhood convenience that you didn't have to go anywhere, but to already have to travel because you know this thing's traveling there. I think it's a little too much travel. Is that not the point of it?
I've never lived in a populated enough area for an ice cream truck to be a constant. I've seen one around where I live now. I think maybe once a summer. I think maybe at the very beginning, or it might have only been once. I don't really remember. But it seems like something that 20 years ago, it made sense. All right, yep. People, it's not quite delivery, but it's, more convenient. But now with Amazon, if you want ice cream, you just order it on Amazon and they send it right to your house. You can get your groceries sent right to your house. So I kind of thought that the ice cream truck would have went away, except for maybe some very unique areas. So kind of surprised that that they need an app and that they still exist.
I mean, can you DoorDash an ice cream truck? Is that what we're basically saying? Like, I'm going here. I think they have these. I don't know if they still do it. When I was living in a bigger area and they actually had these delivery options, there were certain ones where they would tell you, like, the driver is already on the way to these sort of places. So if you order from there, they'll just add on the order. The driver's already there waiting for it and will pick up your order also. So you'll get it faster. So it's almost like they're telling you, hey, the ice cream man's coming around the corner over here. If you're interested, this is where you do business. I don't know.
That's what it sounds like this app is going to do for you. So you can know, and you don't have to just hope that ice cream is coming. You will know. Okay, there's ice cream in the vicinity. But once again, you can just at many different sites and apps and services right now just get the ice cream already right to you.
We really probably shouldn't talk about ice cream, but since we've already done it, I know you didn't have one. Is there a particular item you would want from an ice cream truck?
I think just kind of your standard ice cream cone, the one that has the chocolate on the cone and has the peanuts. It's like peanut chocolate on top with vanilla ice cream. I think that's my go-to. Yeah. What about you?
It's just whatever. Original is fine. I think a sandwich always sounds appealing, but that soft serve melts real fast. So
real fast. You got to be on your A game with
it's either that. Sandwich. Yeah, this isn't we're going to eat later. This is I'm eating it out of the hand that just handed it to me. Like, it's immediate. So
not savoring it for sure.
I do think I may be somebody who's going to be, I'll ask for the cone, but I'm going to ask for a cup too. Because it's going to tip over or drip, or at some point I'm going to tip it upside down and start forking at it with something. Is that weird? Am I the weird guy for that? No. All right. I'm lactose intolerant anyways. Yeah. All right.
It's pretty old school. It's like more, it's mature. It's a mature route that you're going to make a mess, where I think I'm still at the, I'll be able to eat it fast. I'll figure it out. And then I'm going to end up with a mess on my hands, quite literally, and you're going to walk away with nice, clean, not sticky hands.
I'm really confused on how I'm going to be made fun of, yet the person that's wrapped like 15 napkins around the cone and is just soaking it all up is somehow more effective than me. Yeah, how many napkins do you need? You're wasting it. I already used one extra cup that, guess what? It was made to hold ice cream. It was, you know, sorry. All right, no apologies. Maybe we should get back to the actual sports topic of the weekend, you know, NBA playoffs. Is that more relevant coming to a neighborhood near you?
I do like basketball. You know, basketball ice cream really pairs well together, so I think this is going to work.
Well, the playoffs seem to be working. I think we have interesting series. I think we left last week a little worried that certain teams were leading that I didn't anticipate, specifically the Timberwolves over the Denver Nuggets. It is now a 2-2 series. It was 2-0. Nobody has won at home, which is a baffling thing, that seeing how every team seemed to want home court advantage. There was a Jamal Murray heating pad incident that we should probably discuss.
Yeah, can we talk about this? This was a while ago. This was game two in Denver. They had already lost game one, and not only were they getting beat, they were getting destroyed. It was a systematic destruction, and all of a sudden there's something on the court, and the announcers mention it, and then they kind of go away from it, and you figure, oh, it was a fan. And I think they read off, you know, the whatever the fan guidelines, where it's like, big no, you can't be throwing stuff on the court for sure. And then it isn't until you know, half an hour later, I don't even know if they mentioned it on the broadcast right away, but, you know, found out on X, no, that wasn't a fan. It was Jamal Murray. So I'm assuming he's getting suspended. I don't care how frustrated you are. You can't throw something on the court. No one got hurt, but it seems like something that would be easily stepped on, slip and fall. They did fine him $100,000. I believe that's the max. Do you think that he should have been suspended, and for how many games?
I would have thrown him out, for one. I thought it was silly that they kind of acted like they didn't know who did it, when I know they have cameras in every single possible angle of this arena. There's no way they're not going to find whoever did it. And I'm sure originally when they did find out who it was, they assumed it was a fan and were like, oh, wait a minute. This is a little bit more complicated than just finding out who did it. We now have evidence that this was a player, and not only just a player, a pretty good player, a former champion player of just recently in the Denver Nuggets here, and their team's getting crushed right now. I'm a big believer that if you throw the guy out, that's almost like serving your time now, and it's not no need for a future suspension. But when you don't correct it and throw him out the game of, I think you have to tag on a suspension for all this. Now, all that being said, you said nobody was injured in all of this, right? Like, no injuries were made, right? Or so, like, there are rules. There are rules to prevent certain things, that certain terrible thing didn't happen. Now, are we going to punish somebody because the rule was broken and yet no consequences were faced? I think this is a little bit similar, and I'm glad they didn't suspend him, similar to the Suns getting suspended years ago, where guys were suspended for coming off the bench and essentially literally walking over a line that's supposed to prevent them from fighting someone. They didn't fight anybody, but they walked over a line that says, we need to keep you behind this so you don't fight anyone. But I always thought that was so silly. It was like, well, if you're going to suspend him when the actual thing goes wrong, when they do cross the line, not like nothing. No consequences happened after all that. So I guess I'm just better off with a better quality basketball without Jamal Murray suspended. But I don't think there's another player in the league that really would have dodged this. How likable do you have to be to avoid the suspension? Because I do think there's some favoritism having here, and that if it was someone, say, I don't know, Draymond Green, we're not even discussing this. He gets tossed that game. He's probably suspended the rest of the series, if not the rest of the year. It's like, you can't throw stuff. So I'm a little like selfish, I guess, as a consumer, because I think I was rewarded that they did the right thing of giving us the games we wanted. But in a fairness of a league, I think this was a miss. I think they easily, it wouldn't, like, would you have given him a hard time if they suspended him? Like, what was the argument against it?
I assumed he was getting suspended. I thought he didn't get kicked out because the referees didn't see that he was the one that threw it. And then you just reviewing that later gets wonky. You know, when does it get reviewed? So I assumed the league sees what happens. It says it's in the same vein as the gambling suspension. It's just, you're nipping it in the bud. This cannot happen. You can't throw stuff onto the court. you can't gamble, you can't throw stuff on the court. They really don't want fighting, so that's why they came up with the rule, like, if you leave the bench area, automatic suspension. So I assumed it was a game. I thought he was for sure out game three.
Shocking. Almost as shocking as Denver tying this up. I think we talked last week of Edwards is the greatest player ever, and he, there's no way that's going to stop him. I can't believe he's doing what he's doing against Denver. Denver's supposed to be like the safe bet and is just getting owned right now. And then here we are, Rudy back and all. Rudy playing at home. Home court not meaning anything. We are tied 2-2. I don't even think the heating pad's the worst thing I've seen in this series. I think Cat's ball pressure is the worst thing I've seen. He's just the worst type of defender. It's like telling him to play hard is like just telling him to go foul people. It's like, all right, well, then don't play hard because that's not working. The amount of ball pressure he's trying to do from 90 feet from his own basket is just ridiculous. The foul trouble continues to be just inexplainable. He's just not that type of player. He's too big and too slow to be reaching the way he reaches. He thinks he's like TJ McConnell, and he's just not. Other than that, I think that there's just a little consistency problems between, you know, Naz Reid not having 5 threes in the fourth quarter. But I think Edwards has consistently still been the best player in this series. Is that kind of still crazy to say? I know you weren't ready to like anoint him last week, but I think Edwards has still been the best player in the series.
I mean, even the last game that they lost, game four, he still got 44 points, and it wasn't a terrible, well, yeah, he took 40 shots. It was pretty efficient. It's just he didn't have anyone to help around him, and I think Cat is the problem, and I think that's what really helped in the first two games is that Cat didn't foul and was able to contribute. But we've seen, I think that's the exception more than the rule. We've seen this for a while, that it, not like the Timberwolves have been in a lot of playoff games, but they'd get in, and then it's almost like Cat turns into a different player where he gets way worse, and like you mentioned, like forgets. Like, you're an enormous person, and if you hit somebody, like, they're going to call a foul every time. And he still seems getting frustrated by it, but it's just, I don't know how things are so different for him in the playoffs.
He's not the only one having referee problems. I thought Rudy was just pushing people recklessly last night.
He did the money sign again. I bet he gets fined.
He should. I think he was completely guilty of all this. I can't believe these monster human beings who were two of the biggest people out on the court are just shoving people, hoping that no one's gonna see. Like I think.
Yeah, you're not in a pickup game or something. Like, there's cameras everywhere. There's three referees. Even if you get away with it in the game, the other team, you know, if you beat them, is gonna submit to the league all the times that you push them, and it's for sure gonna get noticed. And there's, like you said, they're the biggest guys out there, and it's, you know, I saw the one on Murray. It's just a blatant two-handed shove in the back. It's an easy call of a foul. Like, I don't even know where you would think that you could get away with it. Murray, I don't even think really realizes he's there. It's not a flop at all. I don't even think it was embellished. It's, if you're standing there and someone pushes you in the back, like that's going to happen. He didn't fall down. He got pushed forward and he went forward.
I think the other thing, specifically the Murray push that you're talking about, I think Rudy was going to get that rebound without the push. He's 3 feet taller than Murray.
Probably.
Why does he need to push the point guard of the other team off from getting a rebound when he could just grab it, and then who knows what happens after that? He might score, he might pass it back out, they might get another possession. Instead, it puts him back in foul trouble, of which Joker is already doing everything he can to put all the pressure on these guys, and these guys are doing everything they can to put the pressure on him. And it's just this waving back and forth between like really hard defense and a whole bunch of fouls. And I think Denver's kind of caught on to that. I think that was caught him off guard in the first two games, but I think they're comfortable with what these big guys are going to be bringing him, and they're just working their way around it. I mean, it certainly helps. You're going to get a game like Aaron Gordon and, you know, Justin Holiday last night. I mean, Gordon doesn't miss. I think he has one miss. I think it's 10 of 11, which doesn't even speak to the shots he did make. They were just end of shot clock stuff. It really, really needed those makes. It made a huge difference. Holiday hitting a whole bunch of threes made a huge difference, but I thought, I'm listening to this game on the radio. The guy in the radio at the end of half is going crazy. And it wasn't until I got home later and saw the way the end of the first half ended that I really understood. I was like, all right, yeah, this was nuts. I didn't realize he stole it. I just thought he hit a half-court shot and then put in the momentum of that whole like string of plays together. I feel like the game was over after this. There was a whole other half to be played. But this end, the 8-0 run, which they just completely blow it in Minnesota, I really feel like they blew the game right there. Is that Is that kind of what you thought? I mean, that half court ending was nuts. It's a Caldwell Pope three, and it's a bad inbound that then Murray picks up and steals again.
Terrible. It's a terrible inbound. At the very least, you're taking the last shot, and then you turn it over. And so rather than getting two or three points, now you're giving up the other way. I mean, it's a miraculous shot. You know, it's half court. But I think this just really shows I was listening to Zach Lowe's podcast earlier, and he was saying, this is why you take the half court heave. Well, you know, it's, what, a 5% chance that you make it? But in games like this, a little nudge, and you definitely have some momentum off of this. And he was joking, saying, if you don't take the ending shot, fine him $100. And he said, I'll go to court. He joking, say, I'll take it right to the Supreme Court, you know, going against the players union. And they even mentioned the site Cleaning the Glass will even take out those half court heaves. So like in the past, like Marcus Smart was always one. He didn't care. He'd take it. He didn't do the, just ran out of time. It's like when you're doing your contract, and if you're really looking specifically at your field goal percentage, it's one shot. Maybe you're taking two a game, maybe, but you could just get those right out, and you could point to say, hey, I'm doing everything we can to win the game. So I think this was a good push towards throw the shot up.
I got an idea.
It's fun for everybody.
Let's take it one further. I'm already so confused on what the clutch shot is. Let's make the award the guy that just hit the most shots at the end of every time there was a buzzer. We could count it from end of shot clock to end of quarter to end of game. That's an award now.
Ooh, okay. Here, I'm going to tweak it just a little bit. How about it's it's points-based. So you do it in the first quarter, say it's 1 point. You do it in the fourth quarter, it's 4 points.
Yeah, even better.
Yep.
Even better. That's exciting. I mean, and it's also defined. The whole, I don't really want to get into the whole MVP thing and Shaq basically telling him to his face, like, I don't think you should have won. I don't know. It's made for TV. It's certainly an opinion.
What was the point of that?
Shaq won't let go of the Steve Nash stuff, and it's so old at this point. And It just seems like.
Even if that's what you believe, like, you get to do the interview with the MVP. It's a pretty exclusive interview. I think it was the first one, and that's like how you start things off with them. Like what do you want Jokic to say back to you? Like, oh, okay, well, I have the trophy. Like, what are we doing here? It just seems so bizarre.
Hold on, let's just do this hypothetical. All right, let's just say it's the same TNT crew, and that it's Barkley saying it to, 2002 Shaq? When was the last time Shaq won an MVP? What early 2000s, whatever, mm-hmm. Shaq. Let's say he's doing it, and he's telling him, I really thought Steve Nash should have won. Like, just flip it. We already know how it's going to go. We don't need to act it all out, but, like, I just don't know what he was hoping to accomplish with it. If this happened to him, he would have held a grudge and probably made a big deal about it every day for the rest of his life. And Jokic wasn't even fazed by it at all. So I think, if anything, that says the most about both the guys and who they truly are. I'm a huge fan of Shaq, too. But this sort of stuff, he's oversensitive about all of this, because I really don't hear anyone talking about Steve Nash quite as much. And he's on TV every night and in every single commercial and every single ad possible. I mean, what more could you want? Like, I understand being the ultimate competitor, but I feel like you won, man. Like, you're okay. It's going to be all right.
You're on TV. Yeah, it just seems bizarre. I could easily say see them saying it amongst themselves as they're discussing it, and I think this just even goes beyond the coddling the modern player, and you got to be nice to them to get, and maybe this was a zag to just show, like, hey, I don't mind keeping it real and telling them how I really feel. Just like the first interview, just right off, like, oh no, you didn't deserve it. I just don't know. I don't know what the best case scenario was coming out of that.
All right, game five, Tuesday night, 10:30. Who you got?
I'm going with Denver.
Who you got in the series?
I think Denver's going to win in six.
Oh, wow. You think they're just going to clean sweep this? They're just going to wrap this up real tight here? I don't know.
I think they've gotten it figured out. I mean, still so surprised at what happened in the first two games. I think that they thought they were going to be able to maybe walk through these guys a little bit easier. But I think that as the pressure gets higher, Denver's been through this before. I think Jokic doesn't get phased, and I think on the other side, Cat does get phased, and I think that there's not less pressure as we go forward, and I think that Joker will just do what needs to get done, and that he'll wrap this up.
I think it's going to go 7.
Like, there's no more. Like, I don't think there's another level that Ant can get to. Scored 44 efficient points last game, and they lost. It's like, well, does he have to go for 55 even more efficient? I just don't see that happening.
I think him getting 40 in the loss is actually why I think they're going to win in 7. He's just such a loose cannon where I think that they're close enough into the series that it's going to be hard to win, you know, so many games in a row. They already won 2. The other team won 2. I don't know if anyone else is ever going to win 2 again. Which kind of just means, say, we're going 7, and this is going to be whoever shows up game 7. And if Edwards, who already has taken as many steps as he has, does anything more than what he has, I think he's got it in him for just a legendary game 7. Now, the safe pick and what I thought was totally going to happen was what you said. I thought Denver was going to take care of business here. I assumed they'd figure it all out. I didn't think they'd fall down 0-2. I didn't think they'd lose either of the two games the way they lost. I mean, the way they lost was just like, Murray's throwing stuff on the court. It was bad.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even with
Rudy.
Like
a complete meltdown at home. It wasn't. I mean, we're talking about these other series, and there's games where, you know, a fluky thing happened and luck here or there, or just, oh, you know, a little better execution. No, this was a second time in your building, and this time it was Ant and the crew just saying, we were just squeezing the life out of you, and that was without Gobert.
All right, we both got Denver in game 5. I'm going Denver. You're going Denver in 7. I think I'm going to do Minnesota 6. Denver in 6. I'm doing Minnesota in 7. I just want
on
more.
The road.
I just want more of it. I want more of this, too. I also just, you know, if Jack's going to complain about being tired of Jokic winning, I just want to see Ant take the crown for a second here. Let's just go around.
You've made your Ant allegiance very clear, but you also were asking me what the line was for Denver to come back, and at the time it was 8-1. I haven't checked it recently. I have to imagine now with them having home court advantage that they are now the favorite. But I think we both agreed, especially the way that game 2 ended, that 8-1 was not enough juice for us. I think we were thinking at least 10-1, where, hey, you're gonna have to win 2 on the road, but that's what they've done.
I would have been in for 10-1. I would have thrown some money down. The Cat thing, and then if Edwards isn't amazing every single game, which so far he has been, but if he's not, kind of like we're gonna talk about in the next game with the Knicks and the Pacers. Like, yeah, sorry, Brunson did score 40 again tonight and that you guys lost, but, you know, doing that 4 or 3 games in a row is amazing, but he's not going to do it every night. Like, that's just kind of a wild expectation to have. But, you know, if he's going to do it, you're going to have a chance. You know, if one other guy hits any shots at all and you got a guy scoring 40, you're in the game. You're not out of the game. So I like the wild card for all that. I'm a little worried about the wild card of the Knicks right now, where they are also tied 2-2. They have no OG, no Mitchell, no Bogdan, no Randall, and who knows how hurt everyone else actually already is too from playing 40 minutes. I have breaking news that Josh Hart rested, 3 minutes in game 3 and has played every other minute in the series.
And that's because it was a blowout.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of what New York is doing. I generally like how they play so hard and they play together. I thought even Alex Burks, who hadn't played and kind of was forced to play because they just don't have enough bodies, played really well last night as well. But the depth, the speed of the Pacers, and the bench defense of like TJ McConnell and Toppins coming in, being able to lock down the exhausted Knicks, I think has really changed the series drastically. That they are able to bring a bench that might not score as well as the starters, but has somehow been able to put on vice grips on the Knicks, just struggling to score. They lose 89-121. Whose series is this?
They got jumped right from the beginning.
Is this over?
I don't think that OG is going to be able to come back. You know, a tweaked hamstring, it doesn't really have like a defined timeline. And I think even if he tries to come back, the chance that he re-injures it, I think, is high, as well as I don't think that he's even going to be able to play at the level that he was playing before. I think that one of the reasons why the Pacers bench looks so good is because that the Knicks bench that does play, it's not like it's like the bench. It's the like the bench's bench. I cannot believe how much Josh Hart is playing. He actually rested a bunch this last game because it was, I mean, they pretty much pulled the starters in the third quarter, but the games before, it's not like he's playing 40. He's playing 48 just the whole time. Game two was very exciting. At MSG, something happens with Brunson. They show the replay. Nothing seems to – you couldn't tell. So there's all the speculation, but he's in the back, and it sure looks like he's done. And it's just, oh, man, another injury. And then OG gets hurt later, but then Brunson does come back, leads them to victory, and you're thinking, how – if Indiana can't win this game, how are they going to win? And then game three rolls around, and I talk about a no, yes shot. Andrew Nembhard, like, has the ball, clock's running down, under 30 seconds, and a deep step back three and hits it. A miraculous shot. It, probably just only slightly less miraculous than the Murray shot we were talking about against the Wolves. But the Knicks are a little bit... They're not the zombie Heat, but I don't know exactly what we're gonna call them. But like they keep getting hurt, and sooner or later you're just gonna run out of gas. Like there's a reason that teams have all of these players, and there's a reason that their guys are starting ahead of them. It's because they're better, and just sooner or later, and I think that's kind of what happened in game four is they ran out of gas and knew it pretty quick. And maybe this will help them, because I think if this game was within range, even if, say, if it was 20 points going into the fourth, I think Tibbs is throwing them all out there, and they're going to at least make a run at it. I don't think that the Pacers are some dominant team. Brunson can only do so much, and there's not enough left in the tank. So I am going to go with the Pacers in six.
Pacers in six. I got Pacers in seven. I still think there's going to be enough fight out of this team, and I don't think Indiana is like that much better despite doing some really smart coaching of just hitting the weaknesses. They're playing fast. They're playing a lot of pressure. They're making these guys that are going to play these big minutes work for all of the minutes. There's no LeBron recovery while you're playing kind of minutes for any of them. There's guys in your face, and you talk about Josh Hart played all these minutes. He's the only guy I see play 48 minutes in a game, and at the end of the game, I'm like, I know he impacted the game. I know he did, but is he good at basketball? Like, are we still sure? Because he does all these things where I think he's terrible, and all of these ways he has such a positive impact on the game. It's a bizarre effort for sure that is very, very effective. If he was on my team, I would feel completely different, but there is certainly some head-scratching abilities of, like, are you a good shooter? I don't even know if you're the best dribbler. You could kind of get fast breaks, but you don't always finish. And then somehow he always makes magic happen. And it's just not reliable, I think, at this point. Or at least I don't think
it would
hurt.
They didn't really have an option before, and now they really don't have a backup option. What I'm impressed by with Hart is, you know, you see LeBron. LeBron's much older, but what he is really good at is taking advantage of different points in the game to not give a full effort or maybe not give any effort at all, or little things like on a foul shot, walking to the other end of the court so you're not running down during the play. You're already there established. Hart's playing 48 minutes, and if there's a chance that he's going to get close to an offensive rebound, he's just going after it. And it doesn't seem like he's really doing any sort of, all right, I'm going to try to conserve some energy here because I know I'm playing the full time. It's just all out effort all the time. And you know, someone asked him in one of the post game, hey, you know, are you getting tired? You think you're going too much? And he gave just a really good answer. It's like, how can you not like this guy talking about, hey, you know, like there's blue collar guys waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, working two jobs. Like those are the guys that are tired. Like I'm just playing a basketball game, man. I can still go more. It's just like, oof, all right, man.
Effort get you a long way. It's just about anything. All right, let's move on to the next series. Boston won 106-93, leading 2-1 against Cleveland. I was hoping for a sweep. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm not even sure we're going to be able to wrap this up in five. It's what I'm still predicting, because I just won't shy away from predicting a sweep and then being like, oh, well, it's going to be in six then. It's like, no. I'm going to edge bit by bit and be wrong game by game. But for now, I got Celtics in five. I thought Horford got completely cooked the other day, and I know we don't have Porzingis, and the next best bet is I don't even know who the next best is. It's just not another – it's a slim, small bench, which I'm at the point, let's just go small. Why do we need to go big at all? I mean, Mobley is only going around Horford. He's not going through him. There isn't any bodying. There's not anyone on that team that is extremely physical that I don't think Tatum or, you know, any of our big guards like Drew would be able to handle. I think they would be fine. I just can't keep watching Horford getting targeted off the pick and roll with Mitchell doing another step back three in his face, or Mobley just jab stepping around him and dunking. I like Al. It's been a hell of a run, and I don't think that if we bench him this series that he won't be used in the future as soon as the next series. But I don't think this is the one for him. I can't watch him just completely get targeted every single time. I'd rather Hauser play and we just have a better shooter out there with a little bit more offensive flexibility and just punt the defense. Am I crazy? Because I think we just need to put pressure on all these guys we said that are really good at defense need to start playing defense. Is that wild to say?
The way that it kept happening over and over again, this was on purpose. If this happens a couple of times, and then you try to double team, you do something else, but that we kept letting the switch happen. This was the game plan, and I hated to see it. It just brought back so many memories from the finals where they kept doing it and Steph kept hitting shots. But I think that this might have to just be something that we live with. And I don't think that he is going to continue to hit these step backs at this clip. He really wasn't going past Horford. It was just, he went 7 for 12 from three. And a lot of those were difficult step backs. And I think we're thinking, just let him work himself out. I guess Luke is the next guy up, but Horford, he's not going to be as effective playing. He played 39 minutes. If he's up towards 40, we got to find some more time to give him rest, because he's 38. And I did see Porzingis was working out, getting some shots up, but I think he's still a ways away. And I know Al has gotten a lot of rest this year, but I don't want to be playing him these big minutes, because we're going to need him going forward. But as much as I didn't like it, I think this was the game plan going in, and I just wish we didn't make the switches so easy. It just seems like there's at least some wrinkles we could throw in there, but maybe this was the thought of Mitchell can try to beat us with these step backs, and he won't be able to do it consistently.
I just feel like we built this roster where it's like, hey, we have four guys that can switch on anyone, and we're like, well, we're going to make the one guy who isn't one of those four guys guard the other guy's best player, because the rest of the guys are really good at guarding guys in the corner, and nobody's helping at all. We'll just leave our worst defender pretty much out to dry. You know, it's like if it was any other guys on an island out there, they'd be fine. They're one of the four best defenders in the league. It's not a problem. But if you keep throwing Al out there and expecting him to be Drew Holiday, Derek White, Jason Tatum, or Jaylen Brown, it's just not going to happen. He's just not one. He's not that type of defender anymore.
I think the problem is that if you put Hauser out there, it's the same result, but Hauser's even smaller. So at least with Al, you have a taller guy. He's got a shoot over.
Yeah, but it's not like he's getting offensive rebounds anyway. I mean, Pritchard gets more offensive rebounds than Horford. It's just not a good matchup. I hate that we have such a vulnerability when we're supposedly going to have an impenetrable defense, and yet we're just opting for this weakness to be out there.
Well, we're saying this, and we held Mitchell to 33 points, and the whole team, under 100. I mean, anytime you hold a team under 100 in the modern NBA, like, that's good. That's good defensive effort. And that was a problem in game two, is that we did the same thing, and it's so crazy because, like, we got different guys coming in and out of this team, but our shots don't hit. And so then rather than playing defense harder, we just almost want to let them score quicker so then we could be on offense faster. Where it's like, well, this is not, if we played defense better, we'd get runouts more. This would lead to better offense, but we were just ice cold from three. They were red hot from three. And I think that was the variance game. I just hate that it keeps happening at home. I'm not going to get bent all out of shape, especially after how game three went and how it's just a week and a half ago we were going through this with the Heat also in game two. And so we just got to get our act together tonight. It has nothing to do with our ability. It just seems like a mindset or just there's just like a lull. And I didn't even think in this game too that it was jacking up too many threes. I thought we started the game, Tatum drew two fouls. It was very similar actually to game one when Jaylen Brown drew two fouls right away. I thought we were taking it to the hoop, and just the threes just weren't falling. And, you know, that's the whole live by the three, die by the three, but I don't think that it was just over the top like maybe it has been in past years.
I'm just going to have Shaq call everyone on our roster and say, hey, you shouldn't have been the MVP either. Maybe they'll wake us up a little bit. You weren't an MVP either. I picked another guy. It's just a little extra juice. Just to remind everyone, because there's been a whole lot of, me included, you know, a lot of Anthony Edwards talk, and, you know, Tatum's been around a long time, and Brown and Tatum have won a lot of playoff games. It hasn't quite added up to a championship, but it's a pretty successful career. I mean, I don't think you could argue any other way. And
yeah, I want to mention this because especially after game two, Tatum hasn't been amazing this playoffs, but I've been seeing him getting compared to Tobias Harris, and I think that it's gone way too far on the hate. Had a great game three. This was, you know, before this. Three ball has not been great, but he is the main focus of the defense. You could definitely see it in the Miami game where, you know, there are three guys. There's a primary defender and there are two guys all on him. So he has to get through that. And I think he is at that level. And I just hear it seem like you're getting a lot of flack and just, oh, you know, last year this and last year that. Literally last year in a game seven, he scored 50 points to lead the team to a victory. That was 1 year ago. That's not, 4 years ago, and you got to pick and choose. And he's definitely had his, struggles here and there. But I think that it's gone too far with just, he's the pass. They'll never figure it out. And I think there are going to be a lot of good games ahead of him this year and in the future where you just look at it. I don't know if he's averaging a double-double, but he's had multiple double-doubles where he's getting boards. He's playing great defense, and I don't like all of the podcast people just taking shots at him. Some of this is because we haven't won a championship. We made one finals, but there's the first three, maybe 4 years, we were just way ahead of schedule. You know, there's these other young stars that they're good in the regular season. They're not even in the playoffs yet. So I don't think we should be holding that against them.
My biggest frustration with him is, and it's really not just with him, it's with this whole team in general. The combined powers of them when the ball is moving is unstoppable. We have too many threats out there. There's too many good players that can put the ball on the floor, can shoot, and do whatever they really need to do to make an offense threatening. And yet, that's kind of why Tatum's numbers are down, I would say, and aren't, you know, he's not the true number one option. There's four options that are great options, and sometimes the fifth option is the hottest guy on the floor. And he's allowing that to happen, and that is great. I'm not arguing with any of that. I think that's truly beneficial, and what's going to get him the closest to getting a championship is playing like that. The flip side of that is when we put all of the weight on him, it's like, hey, we are not playing well right now. You have to get us out of all of this. And then it's like, all right, well, now I have to be the best player on a bad team kind of style player. And that I think that's where everyone wants to see him ascend to this, you know, perfect ball hog level of Luka and Edwards and Shea. And it's really hard to do. It's really hard to do. And then when he doesn't do that,
and we shouldn't have to do it with the team that we have,
it wouldn't be in our best interest. It really is our worst punch. If you really want to put it in comparison to what the other options could be. And this is why we're so bad at the end of the game, is that we resort to that as our best option. And it's just not. But I think that's also hurting him to some degree of these comparisons, where the workload that Edwards is getting is not the same as Tatum. But what's best for Tatum is to continue to play within the team. So he just has to hold out for it, trust the process, and hopefully put a ring on the finger. And then no one's going to argue with him again. You know what? The second Giannis got all this, it was a completely different story. And I the last couple seasons have not gone well for Giannis, but he still got it. He still did it. And we're not far off of that. And Edwards will eventually get to the point where if he doesn't win within 3 years, it'll be the same thing with him. It'll be like, oh, man, they got awfully close. But, you know, all those 40-point games, all those whatever, all that trash talking hasn't really added up. Like, he's still new. He's a new guy on the block right now. But, you know, once Wemby wins a championship in whatever X amount of years, and if he doesn't have one, it's going to be like he gets skipped, kind of like what's happening to Tatum now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an never-ending timeline, and it's not a bad path to be on. It's definitely frustrating when we fall into those traps, but this is the best chance he's ever had at a championship, and he has to still recognize that. Forget all the chatter on the sideline, and hopefully we can just win games. And we should. Who you got winning?
Got to win tonight.
How many games are we going in this one?
Celtics in five.
Wrap it up. I love it.
I think we had our lull or 3-point variance game, whatever you want to call it. And hopefully, if we can keep those to one a series and just go. It's just crazy to me that we only lost four games at home the whole regular season, and we've already done half of that in the playoffs. And really this year, we did not get blown out very often. They're just like a handful of times, and we definitely got blown out in game two. It was close, and then was almost single digits going into the fourth. All right, you know, you're right there. Mitchell hits the three to put them up 12, but you're still within striking distance, and then we just fell apart. But I think we're going to have we just got to stay focused. It has nothing to do with ability. It's just all effort and just staying focused. And I think we'll do that, and we'll get these next two and move on to the next series.
All right, last series. Dallas is up 2-1 on OKC. They take care of business 105-101 in the last game. There's moments where Lu Dort, I think, deserves to be on the floor. It's almost a Josh Hart level of like, you know, I see it. It's great. That's awesome. I mean, super physical with Luka. But then the offense is just not there. It's not just the same threat, and the defense has figured it out, and they've adjusted a certain way that I just don't think is benefiting them. Where I don't think Shea got enough help. I thought Luka and Kyrie were excellent. They made some really good decisions. I mean, nobody's better at making something out of nothing than those two. And I think everyone from here on is going to be really attentive to, hey, P.J. Washington's going to shoot a three from the corner. Just watch out for that. It's going to happen. I'd start maybe trying to take that away and maybe see if anyone else wants to hit a three from anywhere else, because I didn't think he'd be what he is right now, but they're good looks, right? He just keeps shooting. They're going in. I mean, these are some crazy numbers he's putting up right now. Dallas taking care of business here is certainly the driver's seat, playing at home tonight at 9:30, Monday 9:30. Are they going to be able to take this whole series now, or is this like panic time for OKC?
I think OKC being young, I think you would ask me, and I said I thought they were more talented than Dallas, and you know, Luka's still banged up, but seems to just kind of be making it happen, even if that still is the case. And I thought that OKC being young, I didn't think that it would impact them so much, and maybe I was wrong. Maybe having the veteran guys where Kyrie has been in this situation before. Maybe Luka hasn't quite been in this situation in America, but you know, he's been around for a while. He's been in European championships before in that environment. So I don't think that, you know, going to OKC and having them wearing their matching t-shirts up in the crowd is really going to, you know, scare them away. This conference or this series did have, I think, one of the funniest visuals that we've had in the playoffs was they wanted to do Hack Shack on Lively, and so Lively, who's over 7 feet, notices that they're going to do it, and then Chet, also over 7 feet, is the one that has to go foul him, and rather than just being there getting the foul, he just runs. He runs away, and Chet's chasing after him with his hands outstretched like he's a Scooby-Doo villain trying to chase after him, and meanwhile, there's like a whole basketball play, a 4-on-4 happening, and so he never made it over to Lively in time, but it was like a bunch of little kids playing tag, and that was one of the funniest things I've seen in this playoffs.
It's a good strategy. We definitely worked at that in practice, right? That was an improv? Somebody talked about this before the game. And why did Shaq ever this?
I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense. He's a big man. He's not the best free throw shooter and a rookie. You know, he was at home, but you know, Kyrie said afterwards, you know, don't run away. You know, just giving the rookie confidence, saying, let them follow you, make the free throws, you know, punish them for thinking they could take advantage of you. So I like that coming out of Kyrie as a leader of the team.
I mean, how ridiculous would it be if he twisted an ankle running away from a foul? It's like, what were you doing? It's like, oh, well, this guy in the baseline was like chasing me. I was like, and I ran away.
What?
It's like, it's just, you never really, it's just funny seeing large human beings play tag, essentially.
Yeah.
It's like a childish game. You should see little kids playing, and then these massive 7-footers running around, this professional making millions of dollars playing tag. It's great. It's been an entertaining series. I think all of the series have been entertaining. I think this one's gonna
go the distance. I think that the Mavericks are gonna win in seven. Continue this kind of miracle run that they have going. I'd like to see Shea. I mean, he did have 30 plus points, but wasn't necessarily the most efficient. But would just like to see him play a little bit better. And I think that PJ is a good contributor, but him scoring high 20s on this efficiency, I don't think that's going to continue, and will make will let OKC win a couple of these games, make this. I think this is the one that goes seven.
I got Dallas in seven. I think we're gonna have some fun with this one. And, once it goes 7-2, I'm not saying Shea can't steal something. He's certainly been one of the MVP caliber players in Shaq's eyes. How many MVPs would Shaq would have won if he'd ran away from all the hack of Shaq? If he just,
yeah, right. Didn't even think about that as an option. Little juke move here and there.
I think that one's on Phil, actually. If you want to blame someone, that's just bad
true,
coaching.
True, yeah. Coach, yeah.
That's not the triangle.
True.
All right, that's it. Anything else from this series? There was something else that happened over the weekend.
No, I'll set with that series.
NBA lottery happened. Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to everyone. Hope you enjoyed it. Did anyone watch this? Did anyone care about any of this? And now that the results are in, and they were actually one of the more exciting lottery pick days as you're ever going to see, does anyone care now? Because they're so out on this draft. I feel bad for this draft class because I know somebody somewhere is going to end up being somebody in here. There's no way everyone in here is just a role player that we're never going to learn anyone's name in this draft class. Somebody will come from somewhere. There's always somebody. I think when they say it's a bad draft class, it's almost universally saying we don't agree on the first pick. And now Atlanta has somehow beat the odds and received the first pick. And it's a big deal. It's not a big deal. It's exciting, I guess. And then there's such an internal questions of Atlanta even before getting this pick that they have a lot to figure out. Did you watch? Did you even keep an eye on this at all?
I did not. I was on my way back from celebrating Mother's Day with my mom, and I wanted to get back in time to see the end of the Knicks-Pacers game, which I assumed was going to be an exciting game, as the seems like all of the Knicks games this year had been, and that was not the case. I knew earlier in the week that it was on, and then I kind of actually forgot on Sunday. Has the lottery ever been on the weekend? I thought it was always, Tuesday, Wednesday, or maybe a Thursday. This has to be, it had to have been some sort of contract that ABC had it, and ABC only has the weekend games. Is that the reason, or has there been weekend draft lotteries and I'm just forgetting?
If you go far back in time, it was Sunday. It was probably not even televised. It was probably just announced Sunday. If you go far enough back.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't televised, we're talking a long time ago,
but the event, the lottery has taken place on Sundays before. I don't know. In recent time, it's been, it has been on Sundays before.
Okay. Yeah. Cause it was definitely surprising when, I checked my phone and found out that, Atlanta had won the pick with a 3% chance, as well as Detroit again, worst record in the league, and gets leapfrogged by a whole bunch of teams. And I feel a little bad for the Detroit fans, but like as the organization, they flatten these odds, and it's the bottom three that have the equal odds to get the number one pick to really try to get rid of the tanking, and they still just have been bad year after year after year. And this is one of those drafts. It's really a letdown after the past couple of years, where 2 years ago we had the big three up at the top, and it seemed like any one of those guys would be good. And Chet and Jabari is kind of maybe the weakest of the three, but Chet and Paolo have definitely looked like they could be guys on good teams. Both teams in the playoffs this year, and then last year, of course, you have Wemby, but this year, I haven't come across any anybody in the media that said, oh, no, this is going to be a really good draft. I think this is going to be like a Anthony Bennett year where the guy that gets picked first, I don't think there's going to be necessarily a consensus, and it could come out of nowhere, and it's going to be a lot of pressure on that guy where really probably 1 through 20 are all just pretty close to the same and no real stars, and we won't really know till later on, and it'll probably have much more to do with fit than their ability or their potential right now. I mean, you know, I'm looking through the list, and, you know, the top three, we have Zachariah Risacher, foreign guy, don't know anything about him. Second guy, Alexander Saar, also international. He's coming from, I believe he's playing in Australia right now. I believe, and he's originally from France. And really the only reason that I know him is that his older brother, Olivier Saar, close to maybe playing in the NBA. He's playing in the G League. He played for Kentucky. So that's the only reason I know him. And then the third guy, Donovan Klingon, he was on UConn, 7'2", big center. But he's really more of a, like the old school center of really tall, you know, around the hoop, rim protection, but is not a shooter. And like, that's the third guy. Like last year, and for sure, generational talent, all that, you know, possibly the greatest talent of all time. You know, we'll see how it works out. Is like, he's taller than that and has guard skills. So just the drop down is a lot. And yeah. I don't see Detroit being much better, and I think they're going to be in the lottery again next year.
I wrote down little comments by each pick here. So for Atlanta, I just wrote, wow, because, I mean, just beating the odds, and then also just the amount of media that we're now going to discuss between Trey versus Murray, and they're going to move one of them, and then as well as you just mentioned, like, nobody's picked a true number one, and you know Atlanta, who has not exactly made a whole lot of great decisions of recently, is now in the driver's seat of basically being picked apart for making the wrong decision. It's a gift and a curse, the first pick. But, you know,
so just as a little comparison, like you talk about beating the odds, if this had happened last year, where Atlanta was, do you know who would have got the first pick?
No, us.
It was the Mavericks. And remember the Mavericks like lost down the stretch, and we kind of like,
everyone, you know, made fun of them. Yeah.
And it was like, oh, what are you doing? You should have, like, if you'd made at least a little bit of an effort, you could have gotten to the playoffs. So who knows what's going to happen? You know, see what happened with the Heat, you know, some of these other teams that, you know, were able to make a run. And oh boy, imagine Wemby on this current, like, he's in the Lively spot, where Lively's been playing great, but he's not Wembanyama. So it's not nearly the same this year, where I don't know. I don't think any of these guys coming out of Atlanta is really going to move the needle. I think they're still going to be a middle of the road team, you know, maybe a six, probably in the play-in game again. And that's if they don't make some sort of drastic move on, you know, do you trade away Trey and then you get more assets, or Murray and it'll be less assets, but you try to still continue to build around Trey. I think out of all the years to scoop the number one seed, or not seed, the number one pick, I think this is the kind of most meh kind of year to do it.
Well, I thought one of the funniest things I saw was like everyone feeling bad for Detroit at five, which I wrote just, oh no, next to it, because the ironic part is they would have got a better pick if they just won more games, because then they would have been the Atlanta spot. It's just, there's some theory to that as well, is that one of these teams could have won one more game and jumped to the Atlanta spot, and you know, who knows what happens then? Then it's them instead of you. At Washington's going to be at two. What I wrote next to them is, we need help. Houston's going to be at three, which is just a sneaky good team, is what I wrote next to them. I don't know what value they're going to find there, but they already have, like, they're good. That team is, I think, built to some degree, and whatever they add this year is just additional. At four, you're getting San Antonio, where we already talked about Wemby. This is like Thanos is coming, all right? This is inevitable. This is going to happen. And they're at four, and they're at eight, in which they're going to get two shots at whatever crapshoot of guys are going to be left in this. Of which, you know, who knows what they get? Somebody could fall to all this. They could get the perfect role players. And either way, they're going to have Wemby next year again. Detroit's at five. Oh, no. Charlotte, I said maybe next year. Maybe they'll get a better pick next year. You know, they're going to be back. Portland.
They got a new coach.
Yeah. Are you familiar with him?
It's Charles Lee. He was an assistant for the Celtics. And It's funny. I don't feel like I've gotten a lot of buzz about him, but there are sure a lot of head coaches in the league right now that have recent ties to the Celtics.
They've all figured us out, but luckily we're not going to have to face Charlotte anytime soon. They'll definitely be back next year. Portland at 7, they're going to be back next year. San Antonio's at 8. Memphis at 9, I think this can end up being something sneaky here. I think there was a world in which Memphis is like, all right, fine. You know, suspend Ja, we'll punt the season, Marcus is out, everyone else, Jaren Jackson's hurt. You know,
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
this 9 pick will
Everyone
be
got
top.
hurt.
Maybe this 9 pick will be top 5, and to fall at 9, it's kind of like the bare end of, like, probably the worst case scenario what this could be, but it's still something. Like, this is still a team
They
that
should be fine even without a pick. Just everyone coming back healthy should be back towards the playoffs in the West.
yeah, next to them I wrote we won't be back. They are not going to be in the lottery next year, or at least I certainly
Yep.
hope so. Utah at 10, I feel like this plan is like not exactly going according to plan for them. I think they have good value in Danny's won every move he's made, but you know, if the idea is to build with youth talent, at 10, you're not really in the game here. There's not enough skin in this. So I feel like that's kind of a miss for them, and I'd be a little bummed out. But you know, they got plenty of stuff going forward. At what point does this start for Utah? Like, are we starting to be good this year, or next year are we kind of where they were this year, where it's like we could be a little bit good and we could maybe trade some of these pieces for future assets? But at what point does the building really start? Because 10's not getting it done. Right.
Especially this draft.
That's really all I got for the NBA draft, because I think it's
Yep.
ridiculous to think this far ahead, and it's already weird that we had Wemby as the universal number one for so long last year and years kind of upcoming, but I'm worried that nobody's really nominated any of these guys, and the more foreign guys we bring up, that's like, I don't know. Are they Luka or are they not? Because that's really what I need to be defined by. You got anything else for any of this? Anything else for the people out there?
The only one other thing draft related, and if this was anybody else, it wouldn't make the news, but because of his dad, it does. Bronny James was cleared by the NBA to health wise to stay in the draft, and it sure sounds like he is fully committed to the NBA, will not be returning to college.
What are we even gonna do? I can't even pick who the number one pick is. I'm supposed to pick if Bronny's even gonna play. I mean, I don't know what to say to any of this. That's great. I'm glad he's healthy, right? That's the real
Yeah,
takeaway from this.
especially after last year, as the cardiac I issue, and just that he was able to play basketball again, it is impressive. It sure seems like he's still very far away from being able to play in the NBA. But I would have thought staying in college, but I don't know. Maybe that hurts at you because you just get older, or maybe just with the situation that he's in, it's just better off being in the G League, and it's just easier with the schedule. I don't know. I don't know what's gonna happen there.
How much longer are we going to have the G League? This is the last year of it, right? Aren't they closing that down?
No. Still having the G League. They're getting rid of the G League Ignite,
Ignite. All right, the
the
Ignite
high
team.
school team,
Okay.
or the equivalent of the high school team.
Okay, that makes more sense. Is that where he's going to end up? And is that even? I just don't know if you're Bronny James, if that's the world you really wanted to. But it seems like that's the steps he's going to have to take. I mean, even if he gets drafted to a team, breaking rotation over a lot of the guys out there. It's just going to be hard. It's not going to be easy. It's not supposed to be easy. And there's a whole lot of other guys trying to fight the same battle. So
Yep.
I don't know what else to say for him. Just glad he's healthy, and I wish him the best. But I can't even pick who the number one pick is. I'm going to try to decide who the guy who might not get drafted is supposed to go. There's nothing here. All right, anything else you want to remind the people out there? Subscribe, little column A, little column B, Spotify, YouTube, Facebook. You can follow Zach on his X account, which is
Wicked Z-Man24.
Floor is yours. You got 30 seconds.
Yeah, just the last thing is tomorrow, Caitlin Clark, actual WNBA debut. So she's been looking pretty good in the preseason games. It looks like some of the talk that once she has to play against grown women, it's going to be different. I think she's still going to be a lot of fun, and it's kind of cool with the WNBA playing in the spring slash summertime. It's like wasn't Caitlin Clark just playing in the Final Four a month ago? Sure was. So Hopefully that momentum can continue, but that is going to be on ESPN2. So nationally televised game, I think it'll be worth checking out.
Hopefully she puts on a show. How many step backs do you think? How many?
Attempts or makes?
Makes. Step back threes. Over, under, four.
Two makes, under.
I'm going four. She's going to have a lot. We'll be back. Thank you.
Little column A, little column B.